It's 19 hours 30 UTC on Friday, December 22nd, and this is Zimbabwe Today. Good evening. I'm Chidonjere.
And I'm Kutunai Mutatwa on VOA's Zimbabwe Today.
Zimbabwe's banks have imposed a $50 limit on withdrawals, but events that is not always guaranteed as the cash is not always available. Many Zimbabweans are having to take time off work to wait in long bank lines to gain access to their money. In his inauguration speech, President Emmerson Mnangagwa emphasized his goal of reviving the economy and relieving the liquid crisis. Today, VOA Zimbabwe Service reporter Evan Zinga spoke with the Deputy Finance Minister Terence Mukupe about the continuing cash crisis and citizen confidence in Zimbabwe banks. Mukupe says things are starting to improve, but explains that the problem is a complex one.
And based on our own analysis, it's been caused by two factors. The first factor has been that we've got a shortage of foreign currency. So because we've got a shortage of foreign currency, you'll actually find that most people who've got access to cash have not been going to bank their money, but have been using whatever cash that they're having to buy foreign currency on the parallel market and thereby circumventing the banking system. And then I think there's also an issue of confidence. Before we had the new dispensation, you know, there was basically no confidence in the banking system, no confidence in the government, no confidence in the president. So you find most people tended to hoard their cash and hold on to their cash. No one was interested in making any deposits. There are certain fundamentals that have to be corrected. And the main fundamental that is to be corrected is that we have to make sure that either we're generating enough exports or we open enough lines of credit. And I think the lines of credit for us to be able to open up, we have to make sure that, like, the talks that we're having with our friends from America, they come to a conclusion. And it's clear in terms of what the Americans are expecting out of us. I don't think there are issues that we cannot be able to surmount. They're not insurmountable issues. And we're pretty positive that we're going to be able to achieve that which they expect us to do. And that's why you find our president has said, the key thing that the Americans have been saying is that we should have free and fair and open and transparent elections. And we are going to make sure that those elections are going to be free, fair, transparent, and everyone is going to be happy with the manner we're going to conduct the election.
That was Terence Mukupe, Zimbabwe's Deputy Finance Minister. He was speaking with VOA's Evan Zinga.
Police yesterday arrested former Agriculture and Mechanization Minister Joseph Made and former Midlands Provincial Affairs Minister Jason Machaya. Their arrests add to the number of former government and ZANU-PF officials who have been charged with corruption-related cases since the ouster of former President Robert Mugabe. They all have one thing in common, an association with the G40 faction within the ruling party, which was known to support the former First Lady Grace Mugabe. Political commentator Zenzele Ndebele tells VOA Zimbabwe Service reporter Chris Gande that the arrests appear to be retribution despite President Emmerson Mnangagwa's call to let bygones be bygones.
But at the end of the day, corruption will not just disappear because two or three ministers have been arrested. This has been happening. You remember way back we had the coroner being arrested, we had the other guys being accused of corruption, but nothing really comes out of this. So it's just a way of saying, you know what, we are capable for arresting people and trust us because we are arrested.
Zenzele Ndebele is a political commentator. He spoke with us from Mulawayo.
Social media has been quick to react to the arrests of former Agriculture Minister Joseph Made and Jason Machaya, the former Midlands Provincial Affairs Minister.
Dean says, why did it take 37 years to start addressing corruption? Was it a coincidence that shortly after a change of leadership, people were suddenly arrested?
Tapiwa Divine says, ED is going in for a kill. He is sweeping out his immediate threat in the manner which he will accuse them for corruption. Of course, some of it is justified, but some of them are just a political gimmick of gunning for votes and public approval.
Mo Slack says, Made was the most incompetent agriculture minister we've had for 37 years. Why Mugabe kept him is a wonder. My speculation is that they were greasing each other's hands. Same with Chumbo.
Sasha says, this Mnangagwa guy means business. More heads will roll.
John Davidson says, go for it, Mr. President, as you have my full support so far.
Jack says, I will start celebrating when I hear these thieves have been sentenced to lengthy jail terms. For now, it seems it's all smoke screens.
Vateereri veStudio 7 tinoda kukuzivisai kuti tava nezvimwe zvirongwa zvakatanga zvatichange tichikupakurirai kubva na 6 a.m. kuseni kwega kwega na 2 p.m. masikati ega ega nechirongwa chenyu chamagaro ziva cha 7 p.m. mazuva ose. Munokwanisa kutibata pa 909 medium wave frequency, pa 4930 shortwave, 15580 shortwave, ne 6080 shortwave, mazuva ose. Musakangana kuti tichangezve tichitepfenyura pa Facebook page yedu ye VOA Shona. Kana musati mafarira Facebook page yedu, ibvai maenda ikoko motsvaga pakanzi like mubva matifarira. Tokuyeuchidzai zvakare zvirongwa izvi zvinenge zvichiitwa na 6 a.m., 2 p.m. na 7 p.m. manheru ega ega. Musakanganwe.
Cheers greeted a white Zimbabwean farming family today as they returned to their land 6 months after they were forcibly evicted. Robert Smart and his family were the first white farmers to return to land that had been seized by the government of former President Robert Mugabe. Scores of his former employees greeted the family. Blessing Zulu with VOA Zimbabwe service is in Harare and spoke with our colleague Kate Pound Dawson about the significance of the Smart family's return to their land.
Farmer in Sape who was kicked out at the end of the President Robert Mugabe era. We understand that he successfully went back to his farm that is in Manicaland province without any problems. But of course, the President, Mr. Mnangagwa, has said there's no going back on the issue of land reform program, meaning to say that he will not allow the majority of white farmers who are now in Mozambique, in Zambia and other countries to come back. But that return, I think, is a very good sign that he's willing to accommodate former white farmers in Zimbabwe who were persecuted by former President Robert Mugabe.
In other words, the case today doesn't mean a wholesale return of land, but that there will be cases in which that's going to be considered and previous landholders will get to come back.
That, I think, is most likely what is going to happen. They remember when they started seizing land in 2000, there was also no respect for bilateral agreements with other countries. Germany, for example, there were farmers from South Africa who had bought land. They had not inherited it. So those were taken as well. So maybe they are going to accommodate those farmers.
Part of the reason for seizing the land was to right some of the injustices of the colonial era. But many people feel that the land seizure program wound up actually damaging the overall economy quite badly because people who took the land often didn't know how to farm it. Is there a sense among average Zimbabweans that having some farmers, some of the white farmers come back to their land, that this could be a good thing?
I think for the majority of Zimbabwe, it's not so much for the white farmers to return. But the problem is that they took land from the white farmers, claiming that they owned vast tracts of land. They constituted about 20% of the population, and they owned 80% of the land. So I think that is why people went to fight, to correct those colonial injustices. But unfortunately, what happened is that after the land was taken, the President Robert Mugabe and those within his orbit became multiple farm owners. So you have ministers with six farms, seven farms. Obviously, they cannot utilize that land. So I think this is also one of the major reasons why the land reform program has been a disaster. It did not, there was no equitable distribution of land. Only a few who were well connected were able to get the land. And now there are serious problems because they cannot manage the multiple farms that they have.
That was VOA's Blessing Zulu speaking with Kate Pound Dawson.
Johannesburg's bus stations are packed with people from all over Africa eager to leave South Africa's biggest city to spend the holidays with their loved ones. Many of the travelers are Zimbabweans, some who will be spending their first ever festive season free of the shadow of Robert Mugabe. The former president was removed by military action about a month ago and replaced by former Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Darren Taylor reports.
The holiday rush inside Johannesburg's Park Station. Travelers mull about waiting for buses and trains. Two of them are husband and wife, Gibbon and Janet Dury, both 32. They shuffle in a long queue. Gibbon's in faded blue jeans, flip-flops, a red cap and a black t-shirt emblazoned with gold letters that read, "Take no prisoners." Janet wears a worn light green dress, a smile that reveals two rows of broken teeth and a belly swollen with their first child. Gibbon says he moved to Johannesburg from Harare 9 years ago to look for work.
I didn't realize I thought there's a life in here, but according to me, I don't see anything else.
So you want to go back one day?
Yes, I need to go back, start a new life again in my place.
Gibbon says he's a qualified electrician, but has only been able to find informal employment guarding cars. It's a job he says he hates because it forces him into contact with criminals.
They have come to steal the cars this side or breaking people's cars windows, stealing the goods inside the car.
The criminals come here, they've got guns, they've got knives, but you guys have got nothing. So what do you do when you see them committing crime?
Most of the time you mustn't come closer to the car. You have to give that person a little space so that you can run and make a call and tell some other people.
Gibbon and Janet find their seats on the bus. The vehicle's driver plays some modern Zimbabwean music to relax his passengers. It doesn't work. Gibbon explains that his parents died when he was a boy, but he's looking forward to spending Christmas with his siblings in Harare. He says his brothers told him that not much has changed in Zimbabwe's capital since Mugabe disappeared, as he puts it. So, as usual, there won't be any luxuries around for the Dury family on Christmas Day. Gibbon met Janet 5 years ago when she was living rough in Johannesburg.
It's a lot of suffering here if you are a girl, let me say like that.
For Janet, the South African rainbow is as washed out as her husband's jeans. She says she's praying that the Zimbabwean economy will improve so she's able to move back to Harare. Janet says she wishes she had some money at this time of the year to show her husband how much he means to her. At a time when millions of people around the world are relaxing, Janet says all she wants for Christmas is work.
Even if I can get a job, he says, you're going to start on January in these dates, I will say that's a great, 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 great present for me.
The bus leaves on its 16-hour-plus journey to Harare. The passengers are sweating, some already sleeping. Janet rubs her stomach. Gibbon reads an old newspaper. He flips a page, and the headline reads, 2018, what to expect? He studies it intently. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
You're listening to Zimbabwe Today, live from Voice of America Studio 22. I'm Chidonjere in Washington. At 44 past the hour, we continue with the news.
A new ceasefire has been signed between the government and rebels of South Sudan. The announcement was made Thursday in Addis Ababa at the end of talks sponsored by the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD. Reporter Ayan Bayero brings us this report filed by VOA's John Tanza in the Ethiopian capital.
The Intergovernmental Authority on Development, IGAD, wrapped up the High-Level Revitalization Forum in Addis Ababa yesterday by having all parties sign an agreement on the cessation of hostilities, protection of civilians, and humanitarian access in South Sudan. IGAD Special Envoy for South Sudan, Ismail Weiss, says the agreement goes into effect at midnight, South Sudan local time, on December 24th.
The milestone achieved during this week could not be possible without the constructive engagement, goodwill, and support of the South Sudanese delegates.
Stakeholders included representatives of the government of South Sudan, opposition parties, armed and unarmed groups, civil society groups, women, and youth. They met this week at the African Union headquarters in Addis Ababa to revive the collapsed South Sudan 2015 peace deal. African Union chairperson Moussa Faki Mohamed strongly advised the South Sudanese leaders to live up to the pledges they have made during the negotiations of a ceasefire agreement. Mohamed says the entire African continent and the East African region is interested in finding an end to the conflict in South Sudan.
The real test of the seriousness of your commitment would reside in the practical actions that you would take to implement the terms of this agreement. Practical actions to stop the fighting, offensives and counter-offensives that have killed so many innocent civilians, bereaved so many families, and caused so much damage.
Mohamed says the signing of the cessation of hostilities comes in the backdrop of continued reports of insecurity across South Sudan. Ethiopian Foreign Minister Workne Jabiehu, who is also chairman of IGAD's Council of Ministers, warned South Sudanese to stop the fighting in their country.
I must emphasize that we will continue to follow up and single out spoilers to be named and shamed and take action as necessary to ensure your effort in reaching this decision is not be wasted. We cannot sit idle by while this important process is picking up. Along with you, we are saying enough is enough.
The top Ethiopian diplomat assured South Sudanese that his country will ensure that the efforts of IGAD's seven member countries to bring peace in South Sudan is not undermined by individuals or the warring groups. Agostino Njoroge is the deputy chairman of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, a body charged with monitoring the 2015 peace deal. Njoroge applauded the various South Sudanese stakeholders for signing a ceasefire accord to create an environment for further negotiations of the failed 2015 peace deal.
This is only the beginning of the high-level revitalization forum, and we expect that the spirit in which this phase of the cessation of hostility has been concluded will continue. We in JEMEC look forward to your return for further negotiations.
The IGAD leaders decided to revive the shattered 2015 peace deal after JEMEC documented several incidences of violations by both the government of South Sudan and rebels loyal to Riek Machar. IGAD Special Envoy reminded the parties who signed the cessation of hostilities to respect the terms of the agreement.
Signing of a document is a very simple exercise, but let me make this appeal to all the parties to this agreement. Please adhere to the commitment you have made tonight to cease all forms of hostilities. Also urge your supporters to do the same.
The second phase of the High-Level Revitalization Forum will start in the second week of January 2018. The various parties will leave Addis Ababa tomorrow and are expected to meet again next year in February to examine the 2015 deal and include other new groups who rebelled against President Kiir's administration after the collapse of the August 2015 peace deal in the first week of July 2016. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
From Nairobi, VOA's Joe Craig talks to analysts about the South Sudan agreement and whether this one will hold when others have not.
A ceasefire is scheduled to go into effect on Christmas Eve in conflict-ridden South Sudan after the country's government and rebel groups, as well as other signatories, signed a cessation of hostilities agreement in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, late Thursday. International Crisis Group senior analyst Casey Copeland says there was a lot of pessimism that the agreement would be signed after both the government and the largest opposition group raised significant challenges to the draft.
Both of those challenges were able to be incorporated. So the government raised issues with the fact that the agreement wouldn't have allowed them to rearm for any other purposes, such as domestic law and order. And the opposition thought that the composition of the ceasefire monitors and the peace oversight body needed to be reviewed in light of changed situations.
U.S. Institute of Peace visiting researcher Ali Virgi says there have been several ceasefire agreements since early 2014. However, he argues that they generally suffer from three main challenges: commitment, verification, and the ability to de-escalate conflict.
The most important of those problems is political commitment. Are the groups that are involved actually committed? So when they say they will immediately disengage, as is specified in this text, do they actually do that? When they say that they will notify everybody under their command of the provisions of this agreement, do they actually take that forward?
Ahmed Soliman, a research associate for the Africa program at Chatham House, emphasizes that for the agreement to hold, South Sudan's neighbors must hold it accountable.
The guarantors of this are going to be the neighbors, the IGAD countries, Uganda, Sudan, Ethiopia, Kenya, others. And without them saying that, you know, there's a risk of punitive measures and that IGAD will pursue those if the parties aren't taking this seriously, then, you know, I see small hope for them, you know, in January when the discussions take place again, leading to positive outcomes.
Virgi argues the success of this agreement will depend upon what happens next.
If everybody goes home or goes off for the holidays, and in 2 weeks or 3 weeks or a month's time, something hasn't really returned, then we're not going to see progress moving forward. It's very difficult to generate momentum once you've come to a stop.
Tens of thousands of people have been killed in South Sudan, and more than 2 million people have fled the country since conflict broke out in December 2013. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Njani mathabe zulu, linjani zulu kandaba. Sifisa ukulibikela ukuthi silethulela indaba ezimqotho ngeZimbabwe suku zonke ngo 6 a.m., 2 p.m. lango 7 p.m. eZimbabwe. Lisibamba kumakakasi ati 909 Metam Wave, 4930, 15580 laku 6080 shortwave frequencies. Lila kunjalo ukusithola ebulenjini bokuzilibazisa ku Facebook ukhasi lethule VOA Ndebele.
Land of sunshine. Cameroon has denied allegations that its soldiers crossed into Nigeria without permission and attacked villages said to be hosting and training armed separatist groups. The media had reported that at least one incursion had been confirmed by the Nigerian government and military officials, but Cameroon says it only attacked border villages in Cameroon where the army separatists were hiding and committing atrocities. Moki Edwin Kinseka reports from Yaoundé.
Cameroon Communication Minister and government spokesman Issa Chiruma says since President Paul Biya declared war on armed separatists about a month ago, the military has launched many raids on areas along Cameroon's border with Nigeria where their training camps are, but have never crossed over to the neighboring state.
The terrorists had taken advantage of the dense forest at the border with Nigeria to set up secret training camps from which they organized raids against our defense forces. Following the dismantlement operation thus carried out, the hideout of these murderers were literally destroyed and the villages previously taken hostage were liberated.
2 weeks ago, Cameroon said the armed separatists advocating independence for the English-speaking northwest and southwest portions of the country were being trained in Nigeria. Lawan Abagashaga, Nigeria's High Commissioner to Cameroon and Special Envoy of President Muhammadu Buhari, visited Cameroon's president and said they would collaborate in fighting the terrorists. This week, Reuters and Nigerian local newspapers reported that Cameroon troops had crossed into Nigeria in pursuit of the armed separatists without seeking authorization from Nigeria, causing a fallout between the two governments. Cameroon says it attacked separatist training camps in the three of its border villages around Mamfe and Eyumodjock. Ojong Anslem, resident of Eyumodjock, says the separatists still gain a lot of support from the borders, even though Cameroon troops are killing many people.
What is now on the streets in the northwest and southwest is sensation.
The UNHCR says the violence has pushed thousands of Cameroonians across the border to Nigeria since October 1, the day the separatists said they had declared their independence and that their humanitarian needs are growing. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
The UN Refugee Agency reports that thousands of people are fleeing from a fresh wave of intercommunal violence this week in the Democratic Republic of Congo's Ituri region. Lisa Slein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The UN Refugee Agency reports more than 2,650 refugees, mostly women and children, have fled to Uganda in search of safety this week. It notes this is five times the usual number of arrivals. The refugees tell aid workers renewed intercommunal violence at Jugu territory have sent them fleeing for their lives. UNHCR spokeswoman Cecile Puyi says the majority of refugees are crossing Lake Albert on rickety fishing vessels. She says many are bringing valuable belongings such as motorbikes and livestock.
Since Monday, there were reports of houses being scorched in the area and people attacked with machetes. More than 20 villages are also reported to have been abandoned due to the fear of reprisals. Refugees report that many more people are waiting to cross, despite the journey's high cost.
Sporadic intercommunal violence between the Hima and Lendu ethnic groups in Ituri, sparked by land disputes, has been going on for decades. Puyi says this latest exodus is putting even more strain upon Uganda, which already hosts some 1.4 million refugees, the largest number in Africa. She says the UNHCR is stepping up its aid for the refugees, but this, she says, is becoming increasingly more difficult to do since the agency has received only 39% of the financing for its operational needs. Puyi says more money is urgently needed to provide shelter and to assist people with special needs. These include unaccompanied children, survivors of sexual and gender-based violence, pregnant women, and people with disabilities. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That is it for us this evening on VOA Zimbabwe Today. I'm Chidonjere.
And I'm Kutsunai Mutetwa. We'll be back again tomorrow at 9:30 p.m. Zimbabwe time for the latest news and analysis in English. VOA Shana and Dewele broadcast can be heard at 7 a.m., 2 p.m., and 7 p.m. Zimbabwe time.
Stay with us around the clock on Facebook at Studio 7, VOA Ndebele and VOA Shona, as well as our VOA website, www.studio7news.com.
Don't leave me, never ever let this go. I love you.